You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. Beware,
IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined today by Greg Miller.
Crossing my legs like a man.
Scott Lowe is here.
I'm also crossing my legs.
And Justin Davis. Ooh. Viewers, we've got a really great show for you today. We're going to be talking about Uncharted 4, Naughty Dog, still crazy, mysterious stuff happening there. We're going to talk about video game consoles, how much time they have left. But first, the big surprise of the week has got to be Facebook buying Oculus for $2
billion. $2
billion.
Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yeah, well,
when are they making another Austin Powers, no, Damon?
Don't give them any ideas. the knee-jerk reaction online was a lot of negativity,
right?
I think
it's moved past knee jerk. I think it's just the reaction.
Yeah,
now.
That's just
the reaction.
Yeah,
it's just the jerk reaction.
Yeah. Well, you wrote an editorial about this yesterday, Scott.
Yeah. So like a lot of the fear, and it's totally warranted. I mean,
nope.
Facebook is
nope.
not. No, I mean, I mean, it's warranted because you know, Facebook, their intentions aren't really clear. But a lot of the fear is associated with things that aren't necessarily true, which is just the assumption that Facebook is going to destroy it and that it's going to be ads everywhere and that it's going to be an inferior experience. But there's really no evidence to support that.
So I think it's right to take a wait-and-see approach.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, you know, Facebook is not a video game company. They're not a technology company. They're not a hardware maker. So this is kind of a weird fit. But anybody that's abandoning ship or losing their minds or canceling their pre-order, I think is not doing. I think they're way, way overreacting.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is Facebook has never bought a hardware company before. Of the software companies that they've bought, they haven't done much with. I mean, if you look at Instagram, the Instagram of you know the last 2 years under Facebook is not that much different from the Facebook, the Instagram of the you know preceding the acquisition. And really,
exactly.
and actually, Facebook's integration on Instagram is like totally optional. Yep.
Like Facebook bought Instagram and then left them alone.
Yeah,
they continue to operate as an independent company. People that use Instagram don't really have any complaints about you know Facebook meddling.
Right.
In terms of Oculus, so I have plenty of distrust for Facebook. I don't love the company. I'm kind of a paranoid guy, so for that reason, I'm a little so-so on Facebook.
Worried about being stabbed.
That's a concern.
I haven't brought that up in a while.
I had a dream about us last night. I'm just remembering this now.
You were stabbing each other.
We were in a car together. You were driving, and it was like a Jeep.
So that's already a crazy dream.
But I know. He lets his wife drive him around everywhere. But I was in the back seat, and like this crazy homeless guy was walking by, and then he was coming towards the car, and he like opened up the door, and he picked up a quarter off the floor,
whoa,
and then left. But like the whole time,
I was like frozen and I couldn't move, and I was sure he was gonna like stab us or something, but nothing happened.
So okay.
We just witnessed a very sweet moment. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. So wait, so you, I was driving and you were in the back seat.
Yeah, yeah. It was like raining too. Well, so, it rained last night, so that was probably why.
So I was like your Lyft driver, your Uber cab.
No, I think we had the same friend relationship that we have now.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I lost my train of thought. Oh,
you were talking about your distrust.
Sure. So if you want to have like a healthy distrust of how this is going, fine. But at least for now, both Zuckerberg and Oculus are saying all the right things. Like all the right words are coming out of their mouth. They're saying, Mark's saying, look, we're still going to aggressively go after hardcore gamers. We're going to leave Oculus alone. They're going to operate as an independent business unit. So, you know, be skeptical and make sure you're keeping an eye on them. But for now, you should at least accept that they're saying that they're going to do things the right way. Palmer Luckey, the CEO of Oculus, said that if you're ever required to have Facebook integration in, you know, our VR headset, I'll leave. Like, I won't stay at the company. So it's like, that's pretty forceful language that they wouldn't have to say.
Right. And I mean, the thing is the technology is not proven. Like, VR's interest or, you know, mass market appeal is not really proven in a big way. So, like, it's in, you know, Facebook's best interest to not mess with it too much. Because if it's this really invasive, ad-laden experience, or if it's somehow, you know, too much of, like, kind of a revenue model in that same way, then people are going to be turned off by it. Like, they're not going to want to, like, the whole concept of VR is so kind of stigmatized by the idea of what it used to be, like the virtual boy and like the...
Lay it on us. Lay it on us.
Yeah.
What you got?
Shallow's got a button nose. You're so handsome. What?
Sometimes it just has to let it out.
Yeah.
Please continue.
Thank you, David. It was going to kill me.
So 3D, not 3D, that's another gimmick, but VR is viewed as very gimmicky by a lot of like mass market consumers, like as far as like what their common association is. If you think back,
sure, to there's a real chance that VR would not take off in a mainstream way without it being handled very, very carefully and presented to people in a very careful way.
Exactly, that's my point. Yeah. Yeah, people are, you know, at least in the gaming community, are really excited about Oculus, right? People have used it, are like, this is very impressive, very cool. But yeah, like, I don't know what my sister in the Midwest, she probably doesn't even know about it, but she will now because you don't get more mainstream than Facebook.
Right. Yep. And I mean, and you summed it up exactly. Like, the only people who've been interested in Oculus have been gamers, so that's kind of why they're so angry. Because it's like, their darling child.
It felt like it was their thing, and now it's like a big mass market Facebook thing.
Yeah.
Right? Well, Clint, what?
I know, this is just how I felt about it. I was like, oh, that's cool, when the story happened. Yeah. I was like, that's cool, that was unexpected.
I was surprised.
It moved on, and then it was why do you care so much?
I expected a little bit of backlash, but the volume and severity of it was definitely surprising to me. And I don't think it's very warranted or rational, honestly.
How often is the internet rational?
That's true.
I mean, it is totally true and fair that the Oculus community feels very grassroots. You know, it's kind of this hacker mentality, this very indie mentality of, like, we're on the cutting edge and working with this kind of crazy new tech and, you know, lots of guys liking to help each other out with their small, sort of strange indie products. And to be a part of Facebook, or now that these guys that are on, like, the Oculus dev forums and deep into it are, like, participating in a Facebook ecosystem, just rubs them the wrong way, just right on the face of it. They just don't like that.
There's absolutely merit in people not wanting to be part of that ecosystem, want to have their data, you know, kind of, because that's Facebook's business, is your data. Like, what you do, what you like, your just basic information. All of that, you know, when you engage with their services, becomes theirs. And that's the product, and that's how they advertise, and that's the whole thing. And if you don't like that, that's fine. But it's just sort of like, they're not alone in that business.
Just Google wait and see. Like, freak out when it's worth, when something happens that you should freak out over, not before it's happened and when they're actually saying the opposite.
But I also feel like Facebook is unfairly targeted as, like, this big data mining company. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're one of the biggest, but, like, it's just a huge industry outside of that. Like, Google does it.
That's true.
Like,
you know, if Google had bought Oculus, people probably wouldn't have been as pissed.
The irony is that I feel like an Oculus under Google would be worse off, because Google buys giant companies all the time, and they just disappear into the Google drone, and then you don't know what's going to happen. Like, but this is a big deal for a company like Facebook.
Yeah. It poses interesting questions about crowdfunding, because it was Kickstarter. Oculus Rift was kickstarted, right, for $2.5 million. The people that contributed to that, they made it. Like, it wouldn't exist without them. But then, like, they don't get any sort of, like, there's no... trickle down. Well, they get bought for $2 billion.
There was also an incredible amount of VC.
Well, that came after, though, to be fair. The Kickstarting did come first.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like, so the Kickstarter thing, and we talked about this on the Tech Fetish podcast, not to plug, but, you know.
Tech Fetish podcast.
Got some tech over here?
Shuhei Yoshida is a subscriber.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually submitted a question today. It was awesome. Bizarre. But, yeah, so, I mean, the Kickstarter thing is you... It's not a traditional investment model. Like you pay for a perk and you get that perk. And yes, you are helping this product get started, but that's the end of your obligation.
Exactly.
To
I totally agree. Like once Oculus delivered the Rift dev kits to the Kickstarter backers, their formal relationship with those backers ended. They delivered on their obligations, and that's it. They don't owe them anything. Yeah. Other than
if you're mad about that, you are not allowed to be mad, because then you're just making Colin Moriarty right. From day one, I've been arguing that Kickstarter is a fine business model. Everyone knows what they're getting into. If all of a sudden you're like, where's my part of the $2 billion?
Well, it feels a little strange because it happened so fast. It's like this company is under 2 years old, and they went from having nothing and needing to sort of pull themselves up by the bootstrap to getting bought for $2 billion. And I think it's that...
Well, they haven't even shipped a consumer model
right,
yet.
Right. The timeline of it is what's making some people go, but yeah, I mean, Kickstarter is, if you don't like Kickstarter, don't use it. And if you think that Kickstarter, like I do think it's an interesting question of, should there be something like Kickstarter where you give people money and then you do own, you know, 1% of the company? Like, that's more interesting.
We could be heading towards that.
Crowdsourced venture capital.
Yeah. Like, that'd be cool.
And I think there's legislation in the works, you know, to put that sort of model in place. But also people could just be like, you know, this isn't what I contributed to. I didn't contribute to a Facebook product, right? So people could just be
But it's like you contributed to get the dev kit, and you did.
Yeah. That's it.
Congratulations. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord slit you.
I've never heard that before.
Really? Yeah. And the resentment's totally fair. It's like, you know, they had an idea that this, like, I mean, the whole Oculus concept was, you know, this open platform for VR, and it was going to be the VR revolution, and now it's potentially going to be used by a much larger corporation, but, like, I do have a lot of faith in the team that's, you know, still at Oculus. I mean, it'd be one thing if they're like, we're buying Oculus and all of the founders are leaving. They're staying on, they're bulking up, like they're gonna be there and to deliver on the commitment that they, you know, promise. So.
There's like a very real chance that this will be, I mean, it could go either way. We'll see. Like I said, in 6 months, 12 months, we'll have a better idea. But there's a very real chance that this could be an improvement over what Oculus could have been on its own.
Sure.
You think about things like, my impression of VR and the Oculus Rift is you put it on, it's incredible, it's mind-blowing, but it's also very isolating. So there's people sitting in the middle of our office, but they're not sitting in the middle of our office. They're somewhere else. Like, their mouths are open, and they're, you know, just looking all around and going, ah.
That's just me eating American Sub Shop. For a second brand in here.
And so it's this very isolating experience, and Facebook is the opposite of that. You know, Facebook exists solely to bring people together. So you put those two ideas together, and you could end up with something that is incredible.
Well, I mean, I don't know. When you're using Facebook, you're still just by yourself just staring at your phone, right?
No, but I don't think...
People make that argument a lot. They're like, kids these days don't connect with anybody. All they're doing is staring at their phone the whole time. But when I'm staring at my phone, I'm like looking at pictures of my nieces and nephews.
Don't bring out the old material.
But it's true.
But you were just playing, like, before we started taping, you weren't looking at pictures of your nephews. You were playing Disco Zoo.
Yeah, not in this instance.
Disco Zoo does not advertise.
So I think you can see something like, it would have been really, really, really hard for Oculus to do something like a PlayStation Home or whatever on their own. But with the help of someone like Facebook, something like that becomes it's not a pipe dream. It's actually really plausible now that it'll launch with some revolutionary piece of software like that, like something out of the book Ready Player One or something like that.
And the Facebook impact is already evident. You know, it's like this week, more people know what Oculus is than ever before.
Yeah, now like mainstream media is writing about
it.
Yeah. So, yeah, it could be what VR needs, because all this time, you know, we all use Oculus and we think it's amazing, but how many, it's going to be hundreds of dollars, right? It's going to be expensive. Who wants to pay that? Who's going to, like, put this thing on their face? I just saw it, like, I just didn't really know what, like, you talk about its mass market potential. I wasn't really sure what that would be. This could be what VR tech needed.
Well, and specifically when you think about the idea of Morpheus, Project Morpheus with PlayStation 4, it actually, I think, will help both products, because before the acquisition by Facebook, both were very, very focused on gaming. You know, PS4 for Morpheus, PC for Oculus. And obviously gaming is going to still be a tremendous focus for Oculus, but it now kind of has the potential to extend to a much broader audience. and allow Sony to kind of more own the gaming side of the console stuff. So I think it's actually it could actually be very, very good for the entire concept.
I mean, I think, so as I mentioned earlier, I'm a paranoid guy. I care about personal privacy a lot, so Facebook sort of concerns me for that reason. But if you want to be concerned about this or be upset about this, be concerned and upset for the right reasons. You don't want to, I mean, that's basically it. Like, just wait and see. Give them a shot.
Yeah. Like, the right reasons, but also think you know, about your reasons, too. Like my whole thing is just, like, you know, think about all these things because, like, the immediate fear is just like, oh, Facebook is going to ruin it. But, like, there is no, think about really what has Facebook really done to kind of make you think that.
A lot of people point to Facebook games. Mm-hmm. You know, they point to stuff like Farmville or all these other shitty games that are on Facebook, but they didn't actually make them. Like, Facebook made a platform, and then a bunch of other companies decided to come in and make all these kind of terrible experiences. So,
right, sure.
I don't know. I'm not as negative as other folks are.
One of our viewers writes in with their thoughts. This is
Rawa McGill.
He's from Saudi Arabia. Says he's a huge fan of IGN. He says, I'd like to share my thoughts on the whole buying thing. If Facebook doesn't tag on mandatory signups or logins to Facebook and anything of that sort, then I'm all for it. The Oculus VR company had its humble beginnings as a Kickstarter project, and to have come this far to be bought by a huge company for $2 billion is an amazing achievement. With the added funding, the team can hire more people, achieve their goal faster, make it even better. They might actually have a chance against Sony's Morpheus. Even though the Oculus is currently better, I still think Sony had a better chance before Facebook bought Oculus VR because of PS4 integration, blah, blah, blah. Now, he brings up Notch from Minecraft. He's spoken out against this whole deal. He claims that they were working on Minecraft for Oculus and then canceled it just because of this deal, because he says he doesn't trust Facebook. But he says, as for Notch canceling Minecraft for Oculus, I find what he said to be very unprofessional. Both he and Facebook will lose money because of this. He should have said the deal fell through or something else. What's the matter?
Aransky was slow on that B-roll. Oh. Notch, Minecraft, blah, and then back to the question, you suck, Aransky.
I love you, Aransky.
He says, I like this since Facebook is a powerful company and you don't want to get on their bad side.
I don't know that I would go that far.
Sorry, Notch, you have no friends now.
I mean, so Oculus Rift, Minecraft on Oculus Rift was never officially in the works.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit dramatic to be like, I'm canceling these plans. But, you know, this is just Notch's way. Notch has a flair for the dramatic, and he's sort of, you know, makes big emotional statements, explosive statements sometimes. You know, for better or worse, it's just the kind of guy that he is. And it's his way of saying, like, I'm not happy about this. Like,
yeah, and I mean, I do think it is, you know, a loss for the platform. I think, you know, Minecraft is one of the biggest games in the world. Like, it's super popular. It would have been done great on the Rift. But, like, I think the onus is on Rift or Oculus and Facebook and, you know, in the months and years to come to prove that this is not, you know, detrimental to the experience or the users, and potentially to try to get games like Minecraft back or any ones that they lost. Although you said, like, you talked to, what, 20 different developers?
Yeah, I reached out to a bunch of developers yesterday, small indie developers that develop on Oculus now, to say, hey, are you looking more at Morpheus? Are you canceling your Oculus plans? Has it changed anything for you? And of all those developers, only one said that they were putting their project on hold. The rest said it was full steam ahead. They basically said what I'm saying. They're like, hey, you know, I'm cautious, I'm a little bit concerned, but I'm not going to overreact, and as long as things stay the same, like, if I can still, you know, make the product that I want to make for my Oculus, I have no problems at all.
In most cases, I would imagine a lot of developers would be like, this is good news, because it's potentially more lucrative for them.
Yeah.
More people are talking about VR now than ever before.
Right. Yeah.
More stability, too.
All right, it'll be very interesting to see how Oculus develops under Facebook's umbrella.
I hope they change the name.
To?
Foculus.
No,
probably. They put the Facebook F in front of Oculus.
Just
branding.
Just call it a day.
Yeah,
probably.
Dear God,
I know you guys were worried. Fuck you, Notch. And they slide the little F in.
Greg, what the heck is going on at Naughty Dog and Sony?
Things continue to be tumultuous.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
Yeah. The you know, Sony Worldwide Studios for a long time have been incredibly stable. You know, you set your watch to them. Everything's over there. It's running like clockwork. And now you got people leaving, you got people getting laid off. It's a crazy minefield.
Do you think it's Morpheus related?
Probably.
Ooh,
I heard that.
So first of all,
that was a joke. I don't really think that. Don't put me out there.
I just want to establish the news, is in case anyone hasn't heard, is that the game director on Uncharted for PS4 left. It's going to Riot Games, makers of League of Legends. And of course, just recently, Amy Hennig, the creative director on Uncharted,
also
recently left. So. Yeah. These key people working on the Uncharted franchise have both left recently.
Right.
And there's also been other, like, layoffs and...
layoffs at a bunch of Sony studios.
Yeah. Evolution, the Drive Club people, their guy just left, but then there was layoffs
people
over there.
Leaving, Jack Tretton leaving.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like...
Sony Santa Monica had layoffs.
It's like
canceled projects.
The PS4 launch was this big triumphant event, right? It was a huge success story. But then there's all this weird stuff. People leaving, layoffs...
No announced games, really.
Yeah, it's strange.
I mean,
they have no announced games.
But I mean, we don't. It's kind of true. It's not that they're not working on stuff, but like, if they don't have a gigantic,
what's the next giant? What's the next giant PlayStation exclusive? And you go, The Order? Is that even this year?
That's awesome.
Uncharted?
That is an exclusive, but that's still
not
a Sony
year.
Game.
And I mean the...
Oh, good point. Yeah, it's Ready at Dawn. Good call. Second party.
The PlayStation 4 is doing really well, but, you know, their margins are low. Like, they're selling that system, you know, really competitively, and they're not making a ton of money off of them. Then you look at the larger context of Sony in general just being in constant peril. Like, larger the structure is not in a good financial place. It's getting better. But
for years, video games have been the one thing that makes money for Sony.
Yeah, so it's troublesome, and I mean, you know, there's rumors that projects have been canceled at Sony Santa Monica.
Sony Santa Monica, yeah, you know, we had the article up about Stig leaving, and that theoretically probably his game got canceled.
Yeah.
That's what because there was all those layoffs of like 60 people there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Do we think, with the exception of someone like Amy Hennig, where we know there was some drama there, do we think that this is just normal turnover, people leaving, you know, projects occasionally get canceled, but then two or three of them happen to happen, and now it's become like a thing, like now anytime they're under more scrutiny... And any time there's cuts or someone leaves, it becomes more of a story than it would have been otherwise.
Also, like, this is, like, the game director.
There's more...
let's say the other things didn't happen and he left. It wouldn't be as big a deal.
It would be. It'd be like the director of a movie leaving before the movie's done, right?
Well, I mean, it's impossible to know just based on the information that's out there.
Right.
But, I mean, we do know that Riot is incredibly successful.
Right.
And from everyone I've spoken to who works there, it's a pretty amazing place to work from what I understand. So
they
like,
got free cereal?
Yeah, they got lots of good good cereal. But
granola bars?
I mean it could be a perfect storm. It could be, you know.
And that was the thing. When the first shoe fell, I totally chalked it up to like Jack Trent, and I was like, "Oh, him leaving has nothing to do with whatever's happening at Naughty Dog or whatever's happening at Sony Santa Monica." I was like, these are just things that are coming together. The Justin leaving Naughty Dog is really peculiar, right? Like, hey, you're game director on what's got to be the flagship PlayStation 4 game. You know, the one that people are for sure going to buy PlayStation 4s for.
Right.
And to walk away. And don't get me wrong, I know Riot's great. I know Riot's a cool company and they make good stuff. It's just a weird thing, especially in light of Amy leaving.
Right. I mean, it does seem like if you're in Sony's position and now you're seeing people connect dots that may or may not be there. Like,
sure.
Sony Santa Monica laid off a bunch of people, but that's because they had and this is all speculation, like I'm stating it like it's fact.
Sure,
like,
sure, sure.
We're pretty sure that they had a project canceled.
Right.
And like maybe that project just wasn't coming together.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, they're a totally separate studio, the Naughty Dog. They're separate from Jack
Tretton. Exactly, exactly.
And then you start like plucking these things together that maybe don't make any sense.
There's a lot of, the problem is that for the first time in a long time, it seems like there's a lot of bad news coming out of Sony first party studios.
Sure.
Yeah. And this, especially with the Evolution stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Where Drive Club was going to be a PlayStation 4 launch title and then quietly was like, no, not going to make launch. And then Scott Rohde on IGN talking to Colin said
back
that we're going back to the drawing board. The Drive Club, you're like, what? And then the guy in charge of Drive Club leaves, and then there's all these layoffs at Evolution. You're like, what the hell is happening there?
Yeah.
But it's like you're just saying what the hell is happening there so many times about things that are all under the Sony umbrella. You're like, what is happening there?
And I mean, it seems like, you know, Sony just published like a big, like, year's worth of, like, you know, what.
Yeah, 100 games coming to PS4
this
year.
But they're all like small indie things.
Yeah, and it's not like not many AAA games in there.
Yeah, so it's kind of curious that all of their like big projects seem to be in like serious tumultuous circumstances. But then you look at stuff like Infamous, like it was, you know, well received. Yeah. But I mean, we haven't seen sales figures yet. But I wonder really what the kind of mass market impact is on that. I mean, obviously it's a fan favorite. We love it.
Yeah.
But it's not something like a Titanfall, you know, for PlayStation 4.
Phenomenon. Well, you think so? You think differently?
Oh, I guess I don't know. I like Infamous a lot more than Titanfall. That's all.
I think I bet it sold well.
Yeah.
Infamous. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, personal feelings aside, I just feel like the appeal of something like a Titanfall as opposed to Infamous is probably a little disparate.
This puts the pressure on E3, right? Of like you own both these systems now, and here's why you own them, right? Like here's the gameplay from this, but what is that going to be?
I guess I don't really know. Like in the absence of facts, I'm sort of unwilling to speculate to too great of a degree. Like IGN has a parent company, we're owned by Ziff Davis, and if something were to happen in some other Ziff Davis office, and then you were to leave IGN, people would be like, "Oh, what's happening at Ziff Davis?"
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
"Nah, it has nothing to do with anything." Like, so
I mean, there is the and it doesn't work much for the Naughty Dog stuff, but there is the reality of fiscal years, right? And so we're quickly approaching the end of this fiscal year, so that's why layoffs start to happen around this time. And so,
well, but companies have run on different calendars, right?
Also
right.
True.
Different fiscal calendars.
And Naughty Dog has been immune from the layoffs, as far as we know.
Well, every Sony studio has been. That's why the layoffs. I think layoffs hit four Sony studios hadn't happened in a long time until now. And so that part is definitely strange. Mm-hmm. That's the one where I do think they're when those four studios all had like cross the board job cuts. That's like kind of like, why is that happening? Like that's unusual.
Yeah. We'll never know.
I was only half joking about Project Morpheus.
You think maybe like Sony's forcing Project Morpheus into Uncharted and people aren't happy with it?
I have no idea. It's something that we know Sony's cooking up this crazy new tech. We know they have first party studios that if they're not working on it, who is?
Yeah, I mean, like, when we talked to Shu at GDC and Dr. Richard Marks as well, there was a conversation of that, right? Of, like, they were very clear that we're not shoehorning this into things. Like, things need to be built from the ground up. But maybe that is the thing. Maybe Evolution's Drive Club's back to the drawing board to have cockpit view or whatever.
I mean, it strikes me as, again, this is maybe. I don't know anything about anything, but it's
you're
like...
You're stupid. You don't know anything.
I don't know. Maybe Jack Tretton is not interested in being an exec of a big VR push.
Sure.
You know, maybe...
Well, for Jack leaving, I think makes a ton of sense. He had been there forever, and he finally got the company. He was there the entire PlayStation 3 time, you know what I mean? And so to take all that on the chin for so long, to finally have this big victory of the PlayStation 4, it's like... I've accomplished what I wanted. You know what I mean? Like people think the PlayStation 4 is a success. Connect the brand that way.
I'm kind of reluctant to think that Sony's betting too big on Morpheus, to be honest. Like if you look at the context of the reveal, thing is like, handmade. It's at a game developers conference. Like as far as like by all reactions, like nobody really has these dev kits yet. Like they didn't like.
It's also earlier. Like we talked about this on Tech Fetish too, that Morpheus is at least a year behind where the Oculus is in terms of its readiness to actually be out on the market.
Well, give
or take.
And I do really feel like the context and the timing is very, very important in that they're just sort of like testing the waters, like to see what people think.
I agree with that.
I mean, I would be very surprised if they haven't learned from the past mistakes of betting big on something like a Move and then like.
Oh, but remember that was very successful. It's only outlets like IGN that talk shit about it, right, Chu?
Yeah. But no, I'm hoping they've learned their lesson and are not like betting at all on Morpheus.
That would be insane to have the PlayStation 4 launch so strong, have a leg up on Xbox for the first time in a long time. And then say, you gotta have this VR headset now if you wanna play.
God, hope not.
Hopefully, things are not as bad as they seem. Hopefully, this is just a lot of little bumps that we're encountering at the same time. And, Uncharted PS4 will come out and it'll be great and everything will be fine.
Please, no. It reminds me of that photo of the dictator standing in front of all the microphones. Like, there's nothing, there's no problems at Sony Studios.
I don't know that reference.
Okay.
Switching gears to the Xbox One. Recently announced the launch window for Japan, not coming out till September in Japan. But they say they do have a unique Japanese exclusive coming to the Xbox One, made by a Japanese developer, a Japanese game made by a Japanese developer. They will be apparently unveiling it at E3 and then showing it off at TGS. What is it? Phil Spencer from Microsoft says, what does he say, the quote? "I'm looking forward to Tokyo Game Show this year and I want to show everyone something never seen before. Stay tuned."
What's the biggest Japanese exclusive it could be?
Right now, it'd probably be like a Monster Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
Dragon Quest.
Connect.
Dragon Warrior.
Monster Hunter Connect.
Yeah. Whatever it is, though, I find it hard to imagine Xbox One really taking off in Japan.
Yeah. I mean, they're already, at that point, they'll be 7 months behind the PlayStation 4 in terms of availability. Like, it's, and it's already you know, unlikely to succeed just based on the performance of the 360, you know, in terms of just culturally, like, you know, that audience is not really as interested.
Yep. It's almost impossible to envision a scenario where the Xbox One experienced any significant level of success in Japan. Yeah.
But they're launching it there, and it costs a lot of money to launch a console in a territory, sure. So...
Xbox isn't afraid of a fight.
I'm just saying, someone at Microsoft thinks it's worth that expense.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound like they're going, like, they were serious about Japan with the 360 and got games like Blue Dragon and really tried really, really hard, and it still didn't go so well for them. So they're launching in the sense that, hey, yeah, we're going to be out in Japan and we have this one exclusive, but I'm not getting the same sense. I mean, maybe that's going to change as we get closer to September, but it doesn't feel like the same gigantic push they tried to make with the 360.
Yeah. It could be good, like... If it's a cool Japanese game, that's good for gamers all over the world.
Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it is, but I just can't see. Like, we've known that Japan has kind of been over console gaming for a long time. It's all about mobile and handhelds. The PS4 launched and it was like successful, but then Colin wrote up the article about how it wasn't selling as well as the Wii U did.
Right.
You know, so add in the fact that Microsoft never got the Xbox 360 to take off. And I just don't see it happening.
The deck is stacked against them.
Yeah.
I think this is more like, you know, on the flip side of it, like, you know, them being 7 months behind the PS4, like, I guess it makes sense in that, like, if they'd launched alongside or earlier, like, without some sort of content tie-in, it would, like, units would just be sitting on shelves, or they would have a whole lot of, you know, surplus in Japan that they can't get rid of, and which is costly. I guess it makes sense to wait until at least they have something, whether it's something amazing or not.
Is there, I don't know enough about the Japanese game scene to know the answer to this, but like there's certain gamers in America, like Caleb at IGN, that just loves Japanese games, imports them, you know, reads all the news and is really, really into it. Are there dudes in Japan? Is there like five guys that are like, yeah, Titanfall?
You see these Madden screenshots?
Yeah. Madden, Titanfall, and Halo, and that's their jam?
Square Enix publishes Call of Duty in Japan. So like there is...
So like how do they sell? Like I guess I don't really know that much about it.
I think they sell enough. Yeah. I think there's, you know, there are some Japanese gamers playing Assassin's Creed 4 and Grand Theft Auto 5.
Is Call of Duty and Halo as big in Japan as like, you know, a really Japanese franchise is in America?
Maybe that's a good actual comparison, yeah. Because Japanese games tend to be niche, you know, titles here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's probably a good
comparison. I'm curious about that now. I want to look it up.
I'm curious about what you think about your brand new Xbox One.
I did. I finally bought an Xbox One. Yay.
Why not?
I don't know why.
Why
that warrants an applause.
You finally put some money into you. Oh, yeah. Something for yourself.
For the last time.
Exactly. Because you had a baby. Right, Aransky?
Whoa. Oh, yeah.
That's actually a cute one.
Oh, my God.
Really
that's
good.
Adorable.
The timing is really good there, too.
I took advantage of the Walmart deal. Amazon price match, but I went ahead and picked it up on Walmart. $450 for the Titanfall bundle, which, since that's a $60 game, that really makes it a little bit cheaper than the PS4. Xbox One, a little bit disappointing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In what way?
All right, moving on.
All right. What else you got in the tank for GameCube?
And I want to be clear, I get accused of being a hater and being negative about everything. So now that I've said that...
And you are.
I absolutely love Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls. So that's something that I love. And now I'm going to talk about something I dislike. All right, so...
I mentioned one thing.
It's a compliment sandwich.
I'm just saying, like, I get like Justin hates every game. That's a comment that
you
I
like
see
Hearthstone?
A lot.
You like Diablo 3?
I like Hearthstone, too.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So I'm not a big FPS guy, and so it came with Titanfall. And so I played a few rounds, and I'm, like, sprinting to get one of the hard points, capture one of the hard points. A dude shoots me. I don't know where he is. I'm dead before I know what's going on. I can't see him. He's hopping all around. And then I respawn, and then it happens again. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I'm not having fun. Like, sure. it's not my game. So then I quit that, and then I played some Peggle.
Yeah.
And Peggle's great, but it's like,
$500 Peggle box.
That's exactly. So I played, you know, probably 10 matches of Titanfall and then played some Peggle, and Peggle's great, and I got Power Stall Golf, and that's great. And I'm like, well, with taxes, this was still $490. All right, well, we'll see you next fall when Halo comes out.
Yeah, I mean, you imagine it'll pay off down the road.
That was why I don't regret buying it, because it's not going to be cheaper than that for a long time. Like, I know I wanted an Xbox One, you know, I had the dough, so I'm like, yeah, I plunk down, I have it, I hook it up, you know, I actually like the Netflix integration and some stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, the console itself is totally fine, but I would be lying if I said my overall feeling was, like, I'm just sitting on the Xbox One menu, and then I'm like, well, okay.
You own a PS4, though, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel more positively about that?
Yeah.
Why?
Infamous. Well, yeah, I did love Infamous. Like, I like Infamous a lot more than Titanfall. I like PlayStation Plus more than Xbox Live.
PlayStation Plus is pretty awesome, though.
I like... It's a little thing, but it's kind of not. Like, it really does affect my brain a lot. Like, the PS4's menus are clean and ad-free, and it feels classier, and that soothing music...
Runs quicker.
Mm-hmm. It loads quicker. Like, I really, really dislike being bombarded with ads when the Xbox One turns on. And, like, I know they make money from them, but, like, the amount of money they make versus the amount of, like, negative feelings they must generate in people. Like, the PS4 just feels so pleasant to, like, navigate through those menus, and it's snappy and feels great, and I don't feel like I'm being marketed to with, like, the Call of Duty World Championships and a bunch of other BS. Like, it makes the Xbox One feel chintzier and cheaper to tab through those menus, in my opinion. Which... I don't want to, like, harp on that, like, that's a huge deal, but it does affect, like, my overall feeling when I'm going through it.
Sure.
Stuff like, there is great stuff, like all the game sharing. All the stuff that everybody already loves is super slick and nice. I actually like the Kinect stuff, too.
Oh, I hate the Kinect stuff.
Talking to it?
Xbox, on!
Yeah.
Xbox, like never listen to anything I ever have to say.
Sure. I do want to borrow, like, I haven't played much Rise on my own personal console, right. Only at events. So stuff like Rise and Dead Rising, I'm going to borrow and get some more use out of the console.
Okay. All right.
Is that offending crazy? Sorry, I don't know.
No, it's not crazy.
You should give Titanfall more chance.
I'm playing.
Did you play with friends or did you play with?
I played alone, which is part of it. I need to hook up with Greg and some other folks. And I do want to point out that I finally checked out Last Titan Standing mode.
Yeah.
And that's more like my speed. It forces teamwork.
Right.
It's more about positioning and less about like Twitch skill. And so it's possible that maybe I'll just hop in and play that mode a couple times a night. Like.
I know this is going to sound weird, but what time of day did you play?
Probably 11 p.m.
Yeah, that's your problem.
Is it all
like,
just the
those
kids?
Those are all the super
kids?
Elite kids like play it like late at night. That's typically
I just don't like I'm cloaked and I'm running and then I get shot in the back and then I'm looking at the kill cam and like he's doing all this crazy stuff and I respawn. Then that just happens the whole match. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I just can't compete with these kids anymore. Like,
yeah, I understand.
I was talking to someone that said they played in the beta and absolutely loved it because it was that magic time where like no one knew
the maps.
What they
were doing.
No one knew what they were doing.
So, Alfredo plays till 4 a.m. and he has printouts of the maps in front of him. You can't do that.
He's played, I think, 90-something hours of that game.
Yeah. Already,
It's insane.
I looked at the Titanfall subreddit and looked at tips. I was watching tips videos to not get owned by the kids. And I am not quite getting the verticality of it yet. Like
that's a big part of it. You can't. Yeah, if you're running on the ground, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah, so I'm still playing it a little bit too much like Call of Duty.
Yeah. I get yelled at online about that a lot.
Okay, a new study conducted by Strategy Analytics finds that console obituaries are premature. They're not dying yet.
Oh,
now,
good.
That's not exactly news to us, right?
Would it be the record sales that have?
Yeah. Yeah. So we need
more research is needed, but don't write them off yet.
Yeah, the two next-gen consoles launched last year, and both have been a big success. So we knew that. But there is some other data that found in the study that I think is interesting. One of the quotes from the study is, "We anticipate a large and sustainable market globally for some years yet, particularly in North America and Western Europe, where they remain the bedrock of games spending." So notice they don't say Asia, you know, like we were just talking about Japan. How
right.
Japan has kind of been over consoles for a while. But the reason they find that consoles are going to be healthy for a few more years, 3 points. Consoles still have a large following. Mobile games are gradually exposing more people to console games.
Mm-hmm.
And console games still have plenty of deeply committed companies invested in them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the mobile games part.
That's totally true.
They're merging. The mobile technology is just rapidly growing, like expanding, and the type of experiences that they can provide. And you know, consoles, and they're quickly catching up to consoles. And then you've got stuff like, we've talked about this for like a year and a half now. Like the similar architecture between PCs and consoles allows for crossplay potentially. Like everything is just sort of merging into like one kind of idea of like just your games everywhere. So I feel like it's not that the console death thing is inaccurate. It's just that consoles are evolving into something more than consoles.
We're coming to the singularity.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no more Xbox Live Arcade. There's just Xbox games, and they're some are $5, some are $60, and so you can get these sort of smaller mobile style or even free to play experiences on your console. Like if you're a casual gamer that plays games on your phone, you can get comparable experiences on a console. We also see more and more and more mobile games hit Steam. You know, stuff like Plague Inc. is like a Steam bestseller. And so I feel like the sense that I get is this, like, okay, we have all the video games and we got mobile games over here in this little corner. Like, I don't feel that as much anymore. Like, I feel like it's more just kind of video games in general.
I mean, look at, like, FTL is coming to, you know, iPad and... Yep. You know, mobile games are making the leap to PC, like Breach and Clear, the mobile game is now on Steam. So
there's a big pipeline of, a lot of people don't understand where all these Steam games are coming from. Yeah. Like, dozens are hitting Steam every single week, and having covered mobile at IGN, I recognize a lot of them are, like, games that are HD versions of mobile games.
Right.
You mentioned how quickly mobile games are advancing. One thing the study notes is that... If disk-based games are going to continue to stay healthy, they must continue to offer a differentiated and higher quality experience than is available on handsets or tablets. And it's true. Like, right now, you can't play Last of Us or Bioshock Infinite on an iPad, but, like, it just, like...
It can't be that far off.
It's just so fast. Like, the technology improves so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this year at CES, NVIDIA showed off this thing called the Tegra K1, and they showed off, like, Unreal 4 running on an Android tablet. Yep. Like, you know, it's not quite there yet, but if you think about how fast they've gotten there, you know, you can imagine a year or 2 years from now, like, the kind of experience. You'll have Xbox 360, PS3 experiences on mobile, you know, not necessarily the same software, but, like, in terms of the caliber of the experience,
right?
Like, within a year or two, you know?
It really comes to, it'll come down to control more than, like, the power of the devices. Like, people don't want to play a hardcore game on a touchscreen.
Yep.
Like, I don't have the solution to that. Like, that's kind of a problem without much of a solution. Companies try, but they're always, they don't go
Well, I mean, Apple's got their made-for-iPhone controller program. Like, they have, you know, I think 5 or 6 different Bluetooth controllers you can pair to your tablet and smartphone. And there's not a ton of killer software to justify it yet. But the, you know, foundation is there. Mm. And it's something that Google's supported even earlier than that and on Android. So I feel like it's all of the pieces are in play. It's just sort of... got to, you know, mature a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so while consoles are still okay for right now, the study finds real growth, real long-term growth is going to happen in mobile. It says that's where we'll see real long-term growth, especially after consoles begin to dip in popularity again around an estimated 2016. That's only 2 years from now.
That's interesting.
I mean, it's just a study, but I think it's interesting.
It seems like that's a short amount of time.
Yeah.
It seems like it'd be longer than that, right? It was like leading into this this console generation. Before we knew PlayStation 4, Xbox One's names, we were like, well, this will be the last console generation. It's all starting to die out, blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares. And then they had the record sales. So it kind of, this fire can be stoked, it seems like.
Yeah. I believe in all the points that you just read off, I guess. You know, I think someone that plays a lot of games on their phone or tablet, I think is more likely to own a console. And so it does become a gateway in that sense. But I also believe that, yeah, in terms of big growth, like big growth opportunities, it's not in the console space. It's in the mobile space.
Yeah, and I don't know. I feel like those estimates are really looking at, again, that like raw horsepower, like units sold thing. But the problem is these products are being sold in such high volumes because they do far more than just games. So, you know, I think it really all comes down to content. And but, you know, someone like Amazon, who's like they bought the Killer Instinct studio, the Triple Helix. What is it? Double Helix.
Double Helix.
Yeah. And, you know, they're going to potentially release their own console, you know, all-in-one box that also plays games and even streams PC games is the rumor. And then, you know, there's an ever-persistent rumor that Apple's going to do the same with iOS. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, the content has to be there and they'd have to spend a lot of money to get recognizable names or lure them away from, you know, console platforms.
If you think about the idea of, like, just think about technology in general. Forget about video games, just like the world we live in.
Are you thinking about it?
Are you thinking about technology?
Yeah. Just in general.
Yeah, toaster.
So it's like if you have a phone and a TV, you know, and you have this other ubiquitous pieces of technology, like the idea of a box designed for playing video games is weird. Like it's weird and strange, and we're so used to it. Like I work at IGN, I think about consoles all the time, so I kind of forget that like
showering, thinking about PlayStation 4.
That is a strange. I come up with a lot of my feature ideas in the shower.
Yeah.
But it's this weird concept, and I know consoles. Consoles do so much more than play games, and that's only going to continue to be the case. So you have non-gaming devices that are used a lot for games, like phones, and then you have gaming devices like Xboxes. That when I'm looking at my Xbox Live friends list, everybody is just on Netflix.
Well, yeah,
right?
You could say that, like, you know, the traditional console has already died.
I agree.
Like, you know, it's like Xbox 360 and PS3. Yeah,
last gen killed that, right?
Yeah.
If you were to track the amount of time that people spend on their Xbox watching TV or streaming video versus playing games,
Microsoft has that data.
It's almost certainly less time spent playing games than doing other stuff.
Yeah, I think that's actually...
So does that mean they're already not a video game console?
Well, not a dedicated one.
Right.
Yeah. Scott has a plane to catch before we run out of time.
Because he's leaving.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
I don't know when he'll be back again.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Dan did.
That's not a cool name.
Boo!
Neither is Justin.
Oh!
Come at me, bro.
Dan says, I currently own a PS3 and a PS4. There are a lot of great PS4 titles coming out this year. I'm low on cash at the minute, haven't been able to purchase the likes of Infamous yet. My question is, do I sell my PS3, along with the great games and memories I have of it, in exchange for maybe 5 PS4 games? I rarely use the PS3 now. The longer I hold onto it, the lower the value gets. However, I put hundreds of thousands of hours, wow, that's a lot of time, into my PS3, possibly around $1,000 alone just on PSN games. Seems a shame just to end it here, but I understand my good memories cannot be sold. I always think, what happens if I want to come back to it? Should I just look forward to upcoming PS4 titles or treasure my PS3?
My gut reaction was sell it, because it's only going to get cheaper and you're only going to get less and less money for it. But the PSN stuff is a great point. Like, you might not ever be able to play those games, you know, again.
Free, at least, not for free.
I think he needs to look at his library and decide how many there's actually a shot he'll go back and play.
Yeah.
And then also what's still coming that he cares about to current gen only.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, last gen only.
Also, back up your saves because PlayStation Now is coming.
Right.
And backwards compatibility. Sure. You may be able to import your experiences.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know if that's true.
I mean, you could. I mean, it's, you know, potentially in the future. But, like, you know, so just back up those memories.
Yeah.
And then,
back it up.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you'll have to pay for it as a subscription model. But, like, you know, it's still there if should you ever have the whim.
Yeah.
We got to come up with a better way to give gamers access to old games.
Well, it's a problem, right? Like, if you upgrade your PC to a new computer,
exactly.
You don't lose all of your Steam games.
That's why I'm more comfortable investing into the Steam ecosystem.
Why isn't there just a PlayStation ecosystem?
That's right? What I mean.
Every game you buy, you have, even if you buy the next PlayStation.
Right.
I think that's really going to be the start of it now that they're on x86 architecture with the PC stuff. Like, it was something I pushed Mark Cerny on, and he just always laughed at me when
I fell over.
Like, I'm talking about neck.
I kept asking, like, you know, because you're at x86, does this mean you guys could potentially release, like, a PlayStation 4.5 or, like, you know, a hyped up version, like, a couple of years from now without having to completely redesign the console? And he was like, well, let's just get through this one first.
Neck.
But, I mean, it's feasible, right? Like, you know, it's
Project Spark.
You know, it could be scalable in the same way.
He would not say that. No. Let me tell you about Project Spark. I've said too much.
Personally, I don't sell my game consoles. I've never sold one. Now, I don't use them all the time. They're just in my closet. But I just don't feel right. Like, you know, I identify as a gamer. It's one of my great loves in life. I have so many great memories with these machines. I just won't ever sell them.
Yeah, I tear it all down, burn it to the ground, start again.
You know, do you sell your consoles?
I used to. Yeah, when I was on the outside looking in. When I was a kid.
Your nose pressed up to the window.
I'll be you one day.
Yeah.
I kept all of mine.
Yeah.
I kept all of mine until I got married.
I know your wife doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's changed now.
I sold a lot of software before the console transition. Like, like the games I knew that I bought and played once, but it would never, ever go back.
Right.
Like, I've actually never traded in a game in my life. I've just realized.
Really?
Nope. Never traded in a game or console. I kept every single one.
That was totally my way to keep playing as a kid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, supplement whatever allowance / money I had cobbled together and then sell off everything I didn't want anymore. I also don't like having the library. Like, I don't like having that much stuff. Like, I don't like collecting anymore.
Yeah. The older I get, I'm becoming more and more anti-stuff.
Yeah.
I'm with you there, too. Sold all my
Can't
have
it both ways.
Well, you know. I'm more keen on keeping the console instead of the games for some reason.
Sure.
Just me.
But it's like it's the two parts of you, like tugging on it, right? Like you have all these memories of these games, and so your heart's like, oh, I want to keep all those, but then you're like, I do not like having a closet full of like garbage that
I don't play. A few years ago at PAX East, I was, you know, looking through one of the retro places, and I bought WWF No Mercy, and I bought Superman 64, right? Because I have, like, great and horrible memories attached to those. And then I brought him back, and then I think it was Rich's girlfriend at the time brought in and gave me an N64, and I had it set up on my desk, and I played it once, and then all that crap got shoved into the corner. And now, like, it's all underneath my desk, those loose games or whatever. It's like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm just going to throw this away one day. But it's like, ugh, you know? In that moment, you're like, No Mercy for $9? Hell yeah, here you go.
Yeah, I do that on Steam all the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that brings us to the end of another GameScoop. Viewers, thank you so much for tuning in wherever you watch the show. If you watch on IGN, thank you. That's our home base. If you watch on YouTube, please like the video. If you are an old school listener listening to the podcast, thank you so much for keeping this show going for so many years.
PlayStation 4 app.
Oh, and the PlayStation 4 app. A lot of viewers like it. It's very convenient to watch.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
We love you too, wherever you're watching, listening. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Justin. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. Ben, we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.